To create and produce memorable TV content that appeals to the masses, you need empathy. In this episode, the founder of Ndlovukazi Concept, Nonhlanhla Dlamini, tells us how she remains relevant as a producer, director, and content creator. For over 20 years, Nonhlanhla has had pivotal roles in some of South Africa's most popular TV shows, such as Khumbule Khaya.
So when I worked on Khumbule Khaya, when we were in the concept phase, I sat with my grandmother a lot. Because Khumbule Khaya, in my world, my grandmother was the target market.
Date My Family, and among others, the Netflix reality series Young, Famous, and African, which was released and consumed in 82 countries. The US, Canada, and Europe are among many of the regions that shared rave reviews about Young, Famous, and African.
Young, Famous, and African was the first intercontinental show that was gonna go out globally to 82 countries at the same time. That has never happened for Netflix before, and it was a big deal. And that then put a lot of pressure.
We talk about the role of social media in gathering audience insights for TV shows and other content pieces.
Show people themselves. Do content about the people themselves. This whole thing of appeal to a global marketing, they will watch you if they want to watch you. They really will. But your audience are the people who want to see themselves. I have learned that South African, Africans in general, we love seeing ourselves do things and achieve things and us.
She also shares how they infuse entertainment value in TV content of a serious nature.
And again, I go to the townships, guys. Guys, our biggest market is the township. I don't know if content creators understand that. And Ekas, you get to understand what's happening on the ground, in reality.
This is The Lead Creative. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Nonhlanhla, thanks so much for making the time to chat to us on The Lead Creative. Before we kick off, I mean, a lot has happened in the past couple of months for you. First of all, congratulations on the SAFTA nominations and the overwhelming success of the reality series Young, Famous, and African.
It's been quite a journey. It's an exciting journey. It has been.
That's true. So just to start off, how would you describe your process when creating content for TV and the channels you work with? What are some of your foundations or the places that you would say, okay, these are my starting points?
In most cases, I look for what is currently happening in my life. I'm the weird one. A lot of people say they look at what's happening around them. I normally assess what's happening in my life. And because I'm a very emotional person, I tend to test out whatever I'm feeling or whatever I'm going through with the people around me. And if I see that it resonates, so I'll post something on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, and if I see the response, if it resonates with a larger audience, then I start exploring creating a format or content based on that. In most cases, broadcasters ask you to come up with a concept. Or I'm at the stage where broadcasters ask me to
say. That's awesome. I mean, you've been at it for 20 years, just a little bit over. Yeah. And so you've built up a name for yourself over time. There are two things that I'm getting out of that, or two questions that come to mind for me. So the one side, of course, is the audience, gathering audience information or audience insight using social media. Is it helpful on the one side? And also when, in instances when a broadcaster calls you and says, we need you to create a show for moms in this time slot and it doesn't look relevant, do you then go back to them and say, this isn't relevant for this type of audience based on the information I know and found?
Broadcasters already know what it is that audiences gravitate towards because they've got audience ratings. like that is numbers, scientifically proven numbers. Do you understand? They get the data. So by the time they send out a brief for a pitch, they already know that their audience is there. So the chances of me going back to a broadcaster and saying that you got this all wrong are very slim. They already know that this was, and what they are looking for is a format and content on how it's going to play out. I do my research in several ways. The first way is I obviously will post on social media. Second way, and the most important one for me, is to actually go out to the audience. So if the audience is 18 to 25 year olds, because they'll tell you, you know, 18 to 25 year olds, you will normally find me around my son's age group because my son is in his early 20s. So it's a nice in between. I will end up going to those spaces where those types of people are hanging around. So as much as I don't like clubbing, I will end up going to a club because that's where the people are. And when I'm getting there, I'm not just knocking them back. I'm literally there buying a couple of drinks with people and chatting, and different types of people. So I feel it out in different areas. The most important place that I go to is townships. Yes. People don't realize that the majority of our audiences live in townships. So you can go
Can we pause it there a little bit on townships? Because I want to delve deeper into that. But before we get to the townships, you mentioned something very interesting about this concept of trash TV, or what is seen to be trash TV. Can you describe to our listeners and viewers what trash TV is? What is this concept of trash TV and how is it described?
Audiences, woke audiences, describe trash TV as TV that is unscrupulous, guys, where you are seeing drama, people are slapping each other, people are pouring alcohol on each other. You're finding out if people are cheating on each other. You're watching very obscure and bizarre things playing out on the screen, seemingly unfiltered. And I need to repeat, seemingly, because it's not unfiltered. It very much is. So that's what trash TV is. And a lot of, like I said, the woke nation get frustrated by trash TV because they're saying their agenda is not to push the people forward. It has no critical thinking and that's its function. People are going through a lot. We've just come back from COVID. Gas prices are going up. Bread prices are going up. All of these things are happening. So in most cases, audiences don't want to sit there and think. They want to sit there and be entertained. Yeah. So trash TV is the entertainment. It is, I describe it as cotton candy. It's popcorn.
Yes.
And then it's gone. Yeah. And for those 24 minutes, you forgot about the fact that West Bank wants to repossess your car.
Absolutely. So it's got great entertainment value, and it also has a rawness about it that isn't in. Yes,
it's a big. That's the biggest thing about trash TV: the authenticity. Because most times, the people that are on those shows are authentically themselves, and they are like that for real. For real, that's why you find the characters and you build the show around them. You don't create them. They are already like that. It's just that people didn't know that people like that existed.
This is interesting. Now, one of the things that come up when you mention spending time around an audience, spending time around an age group, is, of course, this concept, or at least I would think of it as empathy, or at least trying to build an understanding of your audience in a way that you are empathetic to them, you know their lived realities, and you kind of have a sense of what those lived realities are like. In this instance of this, I want to call it, I think, raw, unfiltered, or seemingly unfiltered, as you said, TV rather than trash TV, because I think it's more raw than it is sanitized in a way, right? It's unsanitized TV. Yes. In instances when you then want to create or are creating this unsanitized TV or this unsanitized type of content, how do you get it to a point where it hasn't gone too far, or in points where it doesn't go too far and it remains at this palatable levels of it?
You have edit. We're not broadcasting live. You yes. have edit. When you are shooting these concepts and these shows, you have a general sense of how the episode is going to play out. So you're not just going and pointing cameras. You research has been done on the story. On the story
piece.
You already know where the trigger points are. You already know what makes the other person tick. You already know at what point this person is going to go over the edge, or they're going to scream, or they're going to explode. As the producer, you already know that. There's a lot of psychology that actually goes into producing light. What did you call it? I like the word.
Lighthearted, unsanitized.
Unscripted, filtered, unfiltered TV.
Unfiltered, yeah.
There's a lot of psychology that goes into that. And a lot of people seem not to be aware of this. They think that we just get them, we point cameras. We don't. We know. Mm-hmm. We've done research. So we make sure that it doesn't go over a certain line, by knowing our subject matter and by knowing our characters and so on. This, however, does not mean that there are not certain channels that thrive off of taking the content too far or pushing characters too far.
Yes,
it does happen. What I've realized is that a lot of people who are participating in these shows don't know that they do have the say as to how far they can be pushed.
Okay. That's a
production issue.
Yeah, and also I think that's an awareness thing as well among people with what is right and how far it can be taken.
Yes.
As well.
We
carry on.
We've become very, as producers in general, we've become driven only by, or mostly by viewer ratings. And I sometimes feel that we've stopped caring for the actual characters. And we just push.
Yes.
And obviously, the further you can push, the more amazing it is for you, because viewers are going to tune in because they actually can't believe that all that stuff is happening on screen.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. One of the things that I want to go back to or kind of stick with just for one last question is this thing or this research that you do. How do you know when you've landed on the right and most compelling insights for a show or a piece of content? How do you know that this is the one that I want to expand on?
I don't know. I don't know. I think, I don't know. Maybe because I was trained in it, because I am a copywriter by profession. So, I mean, that's what I studied. So I was taught how to identify things that land with people. But another way is social media. What's great about TikTok, Instagram and especially Reels and Instagram, what I've noticed is the people that follow certain type of content do so because it resonates with them. So if you post something on TikTok and you suddenly start getting a lot of followers, it means that is a type of content that resonates with a lot of people. So what I normally do is that I start looking for the people that are speaking about the type of content that I want to create a show for. Because now I'm starting to pick up from them. And they're, because they already have the numbers. I don't. And I just follow them and I pick up trends from them. And you start seeing that, okay, so more people like that, more people retweeted that, more people shared that, more people did that, what is it, when the screen is split thing? on TikTok.
Yeah, duets, yes. or stitching.
Stitching.
Yes.
Then you start noticing, oh, okay, so this is what people resonate with. That's another way. The third way, I'm not lying. I go to the people that I first spoke to while I was developing the concept, and I sit them down, or I invite them over. I'm like, we're going to have a braai ing ing, but before that happens, I need to run you through how this episode or how this show is going to run. What do you think? Because you're my audience. So when I worked on Khumbule Khaya, while we were in the concept phase, I sat with my grandmother a lot, because Khumbule Khaya in my world was my grandmother was the target market. So I sat with her and I said, so if we had to do this, what would you think? She's like, no, that doesn't make sense. Do you understand? So I go back to the people.
Yes.
I always go back to the people. I'm like, what do you think? And that normally gives me a better sense. So utilize your market.
Yeah. Have you ever got to a point where you were taking one direction, for instance, with a piece of content, with all the information that you had, all the insights that you had gathered, and then you did exactly this. You spoke to the audience and your perspective changed completely, so much so that it changed the piece of content that came out of that production. How do you face those challenges, or how do you make those big changes? Because a lot of planning goes into production, and yet you can't afford to go out there with the wrong insight or a wrong direction.
You adapt. You take your concept and you adapt your concept. There was a show that we did as Ndlovukazi called Cishe Ngafa. We thought it was an amazing show. The people that we had spoken to loved it. The production value was everything. But when it got on air, it didn't resonate. There were rave reviews from people, but it didn't hit the numbers. And the reason it didn't is that people love survival stories, but that show was too real for them. So it didn't resonate. So unfortunately, it got cancelled. But what would have happened if it wasn't cancelled is that we would have had to rework it. So we come across situations where we thought this is the direction we're going, and then we have to go back and we have to adapt and we have to adjust and you have to do it on the run. Sometimes you'll be on set and you suddenly get new insight, and this is what you were going to shoot on the spot. You need to adapt. So adaptability is very important when it comes to creating content. You must be able to, because it costs too much money to start from scratch again.
In adapting, though, with some shows that I've liked, that we kind of all liked, I mean, a show comes out with season one and it's really compelling, it's really great, or it really isn't great, it's too raw, it's too real, as you've just put it. And then season two comes out and that season is less real or less raw or less authentic or less this. At what point do you know that we've adapted enough or we've adapted too much, and you still maintain and keep your audience? Because there's an essence and there's an authenticity, as you've just put it, that you want to maintain and create and build, right, with a piece of content. Similar to, I suppose, Date My Family, similar to Khumbule Khaya. There's a certain level of it that you want, and there's a certain level of it that becomes too raw. And then you've come out with maybe a season or a couple of episodes, and they are too raw. When you come out with season two, you lose that audience that thought you were too raw. At what point do you know? How do you hit that balance?
I think it's important at this stage to explain that 98% of all content that is viewed on TV is commissioned by a channel. What this means is that as much as you have come up with a concept and are scripting it and you are the production house, the IP, the intellectual property, belongs to the channel. The channel will then run the numbers, and the channel will come back to you and say, we feel that your content was too heavy. You need to tone it down. What you feel as the producer is neither here nor there. There are things that you can fight for, and there are also things that you can't fight for. But ultimately, because they have commissioned their work and it is their money, you will do as channel dictates you to do, because
yes,
they have the insight, they have mm-hmm. the audience ratings and they also yeah. have advertisers, and they also have other legalities and so on. So it's not entirely up to the producer 98% of the time, because it's not our money. We are given money to do these things. It is a channel thing. So if you see a drastic change between the first season and the second season, you need to understand that channel walked in and said, look, guys, we need you to adapt certain things and to make these changes. And it is what it is. I mean, there are many times where I just wept, because I'm just like, you can't ask us to take away this aspect, because it is the most authentic part of this format. And it just is.
One of the things that I've noticed, or another thing that I've kind of noticed, and this is, again, looking at the numbers, as you've just put it, because there's numbers and the science behind it. Mm. And sometimes the numbers and the science to the layman, and I put myself there, to us, the layman, the numbers and the science don't make sense, because it seems the content isn't good. There's a soapy, for instance, on SABC One, which is one of the longest running soapies, and there was a big change with the cast and crew and everyone else. And when it came back, it was completely different. And the viewers were saying, when you looked at social media, that actually people are not liking this new format, this new cast and all of this. So to me, the layman, the numbers are telling me on social media that people are hating this. But yes. to the channel, who apparently supposedly have the numbers are telling them something else. It also, of course, means that for the fact that there are so many people posting about it on social media, there are many people kind of watching it and complaining and generating more and more conversation around it. How do you reconcile these two when it seems it doesn't make sense?
I love the fact that at the end you realize that if you're complaining about it and talking about it, it means you're watching it in order to, because you can't complain about something you're not watching. You know?
Yes.
And that's all the channel needs. That's all the channel needs for you to complain about it. I've always said to people, if you don't like content, don't tune in. Don't speak about it. Don't tweet about it. Don't write about it. Do nothing. Change the channel. If you don't, if you want to see a show be pulled off air, don't watch it.
Mm-hmm. This is true.
Then it will have low audience ratings. But if you are busy watching it and you're complaining about it and you're tweeting about it to the advertiser, because that's why the channel is there. The channel is there for it to have money from advertising space. The advertiser like, oh, wow, they hate the show so much that they watch it. We want to advertise in that time slot. Channel makes more money from you watching in order to complain. And they just keep going.
Some of the content you create deals with very serious issues. In fact, a lot of the content you create actually deals with very serious issues at varying levels of seriousness, right? Yeah. One of the ones that comes to mind for me is Abandoned. Can you tell us a little bit about the story behind what Abandoned is before I get to the next question?
We were invited for a pitch again, because please come pitch something of the sort. But because I had worked on Kumbula Kaya for years before that, I worked on the first four seasons as a producer on Kumbula Kaya and a director. I realized that the format needed to change on Kumbula Kaya. But at that particular point in time, the company I was working for and a lot of other things, there was nothing that I could do to kind of like change and adapt the format, because I felt that it had become outdated. So when we were given the opportunity to pitch a show that had to do with reconnecting children that were abandoned with their parents, I then picked up on that. I'm like, we need to bring a lot of those things that would have worked on Kumbula Kaya to a new show such as this. And I think I've forgotten your question.
Yeah, so what is Abandoned about?
So Abandoned is a show where we assist parents who abandoned their children to reconnect with their children, or children that were abandoned by their parents to reconnect with their parents. And the difference between this show and, I'm going to use Khumbulekhaya because a lot of people think it's the same thing, is that we actually use private investigators. So we go and we search via Home Affairs, through police reports, through everything to trace a parent. And then we give the parent the option of saying, yes, I want to meet with my child or not. They have the option.
Okay.
They can say, right, I don't want to.
Right. So with that kind of serious content, how do you balance the seriousness of that kind of content, the seriousness of content such as Cliché Ngafa, with the entertainment side that people tend to look for on TV?
So
again,
using Abandoned as an example, if we only focused on the heaviness of the show, we wouldn't draw in as many audience members as we do now. So we look at factors that make entertainment TV, entertainment TV. The first thing you will notice with entertainment is that it looks amazing. So we shoot it in the same way that you would have shot a Real Housewives, for example. So we use the similar color palettes. If you've noticed, our backstories are not shot in people's homes where umuntu like uhlala emaphandleni noma emkhukhwini, whatever. We bring them into a beautiful space with vast landscapes, and we light it beautifully, and we make sure that they look good as well. So we borrow factors from what works in entertainment, and we bring it into emotainment, so that visually the audience is still getting the same kind of pretty picture and quality. And that takes away from the heaviness of the content. So that's the first thing. The second thing is the way that you cut. If you watch reality shows, they move. And that's what makes reality reality. So we bring that type of element as well into a show like Abandoned, where we move. Like we'll have montages, and we'll be deliberate in the way that we use our music and our sound and so on, so that the audience, as much as the content is heavy, it doesn't leave you heavy and sad. Mm-hmm. You're still entertained.
Okay.
Because entertainment, right, is the music, is the shooting style, is the editing, it's all of these things. It's not just the characters.
Yeah, yeah, it's the nuance. Yes. Entertainment is in the nuance,
yeah,
rather than always in the content of what you are putting together.
A lot of entertainment TV has very thin content, actually. Mm. It just looks, yes, amazing. It's cut amazing. The music is amazing. They pause at the right places. They accentuate certain moments. They put crickets. They put shushes and whatever, you know? So it's a
lot. Yeah. There's a science that I, the viewer, don't always see,
yeah,
which you put there deliberately at every point for me to remain glued to my screen. And something that's kept me glued to my screen and engaged probably a little bit too much, which I loved watching, was Young, Famous and African. Oof. Right. So what are some of the unique observations that you got working with celebrities from different parts of the African continent? What are some of the nuances that you picked up that you had to bring into this piece of production?
The first thing is, celebrities outside of South Africa are massive. They, guys, I'm talking big. I'm talking in terms of social media following. I'm talking in terms of their fan bases and so on. That's one thing that we as South Africans have not gotten right. So if Diamond Platnumz, which is comes from Tanzania, I was blown away at the sheer number of his following. And same with Annie, and same with everybody on Young, Famous and African that was outside of South Africa has a huge following, mm-hmm, base. That's the first thing that blew me away. The second thing that hit me was that we have the know-how in terms of storytelling. We are great when it comes to technicalities and editing and all of these things. But what we do not have is, especially West Africans, they have this shield. I don't know how to explain it. So they are able to act things that are not authentic to them. Whereas we are very authentic as South Africa in our reality series. A lot of who the character is comes through. But West Africa and across the continent, they act. Literally, they act. You are able to say, I need you to act as. And that, they act.
They get into character.
They get into character. Whereas with us, we are genuine. And we are storytellers. Like, and we tell the truth, man. When we're angry, we're really angry. Yes. And we're really crying. Right. And. But from the other people from the continent, I was blown away. I couldn't believe it. I had never seen anything like that before.
Mm-hmm. And also, and what are some of the
Netflix guys?
how was it? Yes, how was it working with producing something for a Netflix in comparison to everything else that you've done for the past 20 years on every other channel, on mainstream TV, on well-known channels, and now you have to work not just with Netflix, but work with Netflix celebrities from across the African continent and produce for a global audience. How was that process for you?
It was daunting. For many, many times, I kept asking if I was actually the right person for the job. I really kept asking because I was edit director on the show, and I didn't think that. I thought they had made a mistake, but then later on I understood why. You know, as the process continued,
why they made a mistake.
Yes, I can see why. But so
yeah.
Netflix is incredibly stringent, and I need to explain this. There is something that is a Netflix original, and there is something that is Netflix Presents. Two different things. If it's a Netflix original, it's their money. They are commissioning you to put the show together. Therefore, their involvement is far, far heavier than if I say I've shot something and I go to Netflix and I negotiate with them and then they put it on their platform. So a lot of times, especially with Otto and Noni Talk Media, when Komoto and I make fun of things that are on Netflix, we're like, why did they put it there? Of course, we know why. It's because it's not a Netflix original. It will normally mostly be sus, but if it's a Netflix original, you will find that you have to tick certain boxes. So they're very stringent. Right. They're very clear. Young, Famous and African was the first intercontinental show that was going to go out globally to 82 countries at the same time. That has never happened for Netflix before, and it was a big deal. And that then put a lot of pressure. On top of that, Young, Famous and African was being pitted up against Bling Empire. Now, guys, Bling Empire is the creme de la creme of reality. And we were doing a show that had never been done before. We're not sure about a lot of things. And Netflix keeps saying, you need to understand that you're going up against Bling Empire. Every time you were reminded. In fact, the shows were supposed to come out at the same time. That's what was supposed to happen. Thankfully, they didn't. And by the time Bling Empire came out, Young, Famous and African had cleaned the floor with them.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show. Now, just sticking with that, what's one of the biggest things, I suppose, that you realized about putting African creativity, and not just African creativity, but creativity from Africa, because it can be global and it's proven to be global in this case, right? So I don't want to localize it in any way. What did that show you about pitting creativity from the continent against everything else that is seen to be the creme de la creme or the greatest that has been created out there? One, are we doing enough to do that, to test ourselves against our peers across the globe? And when we are, in the case that you have been, how does our creativity perform?
I need to point out that because of the way platforms such as Netflix, Amazon, Disney, and so on, they shy away from content that is too immersed into Africa. So you can tell an African story, but within these confines. So it must tick off these boxes and so on, because that is their understanding and that's their experience with their US markets and the European markets and so on. So when they procure content from the continent and it's their money, they want you to tick off certain boxes, and there are certain things that you cannot bring up, which are authentically us. And that saddens me, you know? And we don't yet have platforms that are okay with us telling our stories authentically. So we are mimicking what has worked in Europe and America and just putting in a sprinkle of Africa. And that is the honest to God truth. We are not changing the narrative that much. What we are doing is showing the rest of the world that we do have beautiful buildings, we do have the cars, we do have the money, we can pop bottles and whatever, because evidently the rest of the planet just thought that in Africa we have children who have flies and are dying of AIDS. So that changed the paradigm in terms of showing the stuff. But when it comes to the real, genuine content, we are not there yet. And the world is not open to us, or platforms are not yet open to having our authentic content out there. They still want us to be within the confines of what they deem to be palatable to their international audience.
How's that different, though, from what you mentioned now about a channel putting out a tender, and when they do, they have a format? How is this different in a way to a format that a TV channel would want when a global platform says this is, because I view that as a format, or is it different?
Our channels in South Africa look for hyper localized things. So they want the authenticity of what is actually happening. So if you look at Uthando Nesithembu, that is hyper-localized. And a show like that, you would have to doctor a lot of in order for it to end up on a platform such as Netflix, because they have a bigger global audience. Whereas Uthando Nesithembu is doing very well on DSTV because it's hyper localized, and we can. You don't have to explain a lot. Do you understand? Yes. So absolutely, that's the main difference. So local channels will say it must look. The look must be expensive, but the content is hyper localized. And that's where, I mean, for a while people thought that the Netflixes and everybody was going to knock MultiChoice off the platform, and they're not succeeding because MultiChoice remains hyper localized. The stories are authentically South African, and eventually I'm sure they'll end up being authentically African. And the Netflixes are not ready for that. They're not ready for shows like that.
I hear you. Earlier on, you mentioned seemingly unfiltered content when referring to unsanitized or raw TV that we sometimes see. Yeah. Is there a lot of scripting in reality shows? There are some instances that to me seem not very real. I saw one or two in, for instance, Young, Famous, and African. I started noticing a pattern, for instance, where every show would be centered around each of the celebrities, and there was the big performance towards the end where there was I can't remember I can't remember the person's name now, but there was a lot of shouting.
Jerry's always shouting. Annie's always shouting.
So there was a lot of shouting. We're not friends anymore and this and that, right? So there are instances when it seems unreal. You mentioned people pouring, you know, beer or wine or alcohol over each other. Is there a lot of acting or scripting or some acting and scripting in some of these shows?
So in order for a reality show to become a success and to grip audiences, what first needs to happen is that you have a team of people that actually plot out the series before we even pick up a camera. So based on what has worked in reality, the Kardashians and there's already a format of what works and what resonates with audiences. So you have to tick those boxes in order for the genre to be called reality. If you're not ticking those boxes, it's then not reality TV. And reality TV does not mean it is what is happening. Reality means it's a genre, like drama, like emotainment. There are certain things that need to be
prepared. For sure.
So before you even start shooting, you already have an overall arch of what's going to happen in the series and who's going to do what and who's going to do what. And you literally slot in your people based on their character personalities. Already they have those character traits. So we already know that if we had to take Nontlantla and put her in this situation, she will react like that because we have done research on her. So we know that it's going to tick her off. Mm-hmm. So the producers already know. And the likelihood is that Nontlantla is going to act exactly like that because we already know what to press.
Right.
No.
Makes sense.
And another thing that's also very important to remember with reality TV is that a lot of what is seen on screen is not the people's lives. A lot. Not all of it.
Yes.
And not all the time. Because there are people who are literally living like that. But production has a lot to do with it in terms of dressing the houses, hiring out houses, dressing them, leasing out cars, you know, just to make the show do what you had already plotted for it to do. Because you've said, I want the show to do this, therefore you have to put in those elements.
All of those parts that work there.
So when you say action, it's not like we scripted. We didn't say you must say this.
Yes.
But we sat and we already knew that's what you were going to do. And we just put you in that situation. And then we watch it play out.
Yeah. It's not acted, it's plotted, rather.
There you go.
I think. Yeah. Okay. So one of the other things that you mentioned now, which I'm curious about, is that, of course, it launched, Young, Famous and African launched at the same time in all 82 countries. Mm. Which, outside of Africa, where else did it perform really well? Where else did you get really good feedback from?
America. We were shocked. We were completely, completely shocked because the American audience had never imagined that Africa looks the way it does on Young, Famous, and African. Black Americans or African Americans gave us the biggest love ever, because it solidified their assertion that Africa is more than just a small village. So America, Canada, They raved about the show for weeks. We were shocked. We even saw papers from university professors being written about the show because it just broke so many stereotypes. And the continent, there was quite a lot of love, especially from Nigeria, because Nigeria is so massive in terms of a following. And they were also impressed by what was happening in South Africa because once again, people had their own misconceptions about what South Africans are like and what's happening and whatever. And then they got to see it and so on. So it was the United States, it was Canada, and it was Nigeria. Those, but America blew us away. We didn't be, we just couldn't believe it. We couldn't.
That's amazing. That's amazing. In closing, Nontlanhla, how do you keep yourself relevant as a content creator to ensure that you have empathy for your audiences at all times and at all touch points?
Like I said, I go and I hang out with people. I've got also, like I said, my kids. So I've got a 20-something-year-old and a teenager. I listen to them a lot. I watch a lot of what they watch. I pay close attention to their trends and they tell me the latest words and the latest phrases and whatever. I also have a broad base of friends, like different age groups, because that helps. And again, I go to the townships, guys. Guys, Ekasi, our biggest market is the township. I don't know if content creators understand that. And Ekasi, you get to understand what's happening on the ground, in reality, because we live removed from what's happening, Ekasi. And then we come up with concepts and then they don't resonate. Whereas if uyahamba uyekasi and you hang out nabo sisi bama society and you hang out nabo mama umthandazo and you hang out their shibins and everything, you get back to what resonates with the masses, because the masses are not in suburbia. They're not.
They're out there in the they're out there in townships consuming content.
Townships and peri-urban areas. That's where the masses are, and that's where the target audiences are. Which is why a channel such as Moja Love is doing exceptionally well, and it will never stop doing exceptionally well, because all their content is about Ekasi. All of them. All of it. Things that I would watch and go, but what the hell is that? And then people in the hood are like, no, this is what's happening. Hmm. And that channel took it and put it on TV. I just wish they could shoot it better.
Hmm. Now, in a world where we are becoming more and more digital in our content consumption, we are consuming more content from Showmax, content from Netflix, content from other channels that are becoming less and less hyper-localized, as you said, how do you then still remain as relevant, or how do you then still keep creating content that is so relevant and hyper-local that the person in the township sees themselves in that content when we are becoming more and more digital? And I'm saying this because the more digital we become, I feel like the more global we become in our consumption of content? Or is this something you are not seeing?
You know, I keep hearing this thing, Yoguti, we're gravitating more and more to digital, and I agree fully.
Mm-hmm.
But what we tend to forget is that things like YouTube play a big role, and there are certain channels and programs that have now opened up YouTube pages or channels where they upload their episodes onto the YouTubes and because they've realized that more and more of their audiences are viewing the content on their cell phones. And so you need to understand that you are being hyper-local, but the people who are hyper-local are watching hyper-local content on a YouTube.
Yes,
they're watching it on a View, that app called View and whatever. It's all hyperlocal, you know?
Right.
So just because we're moving into a digital space, it does not mean that the majority of our people are now watching Netflix. No.
That's true.
They're watching hyperlocalized content on their phones on different platforms.
Right, right.
It will always remain relevant. So identify your audience and identify what stories you want to tell on about your or tell to your audience, and then hone in on that, because it is working. That's why Nollywood, that's how Nollywood grew, that's how Bollywood grew, that's how the K-dramas grew and so on is because they were not trying to appeal to the world. They were just appealing to themselves, their people, and their people watch their content. And now our children are now watching K-dramas and. But K-dramas were not created for the Wawas. It was created for Korean people.
Interesting. It's very interesting because what you are saying is precisely what we are seeing on social media, on digital. So the belief was that the more social and digital platforms come along, the more people will not just be connected among themselves, but they'll be connected to the global world. And by doing so, they'll like things that are in the global, on the global stage will appeal to them more. Whereas what has happened was the exact opposite. The more connected we were, the more choice we had, and the more we were choosing more and more of our own niche content, and the more we were finding it because people were creating that content. And it's precisely what you've just described.
The best way to get through to a people is to show the people themselves. Show people themselves. Do content about the people themselves. This whole thing of appeal to a global market, they will watch you if they want to watch you. They really will. But your audience are the people who want to see themselves. I have learned that Africans in general, we love seeing ourselves do things and achieve things and us in our own way. And when people start veering off and wanting to be doing things that are being done in America and Kokaika, and you're just like, you're going to lose your people. You're going to lose your people. Do the things that the people like. We like watching ourselves. We enjoy it. And we like watching ourselves in very compromising light, in a very compromising light. It breaks my heart, but it's the truth. We like pointing and laughing and mocking and being touched. And that's why reality TV is not going anywhere, because for a long time, everybody said that we're going to outgrow reality TV. We are not. It's just going to become more localized.
That's a great point to close on. Show people themselves and become even more hyper-localized. That's a great point to close on. Thank you very much for that, Nontlanhla. It was absolutely awesome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.